Welcome to Blue Peg, Pink Peg, the bi-weekly podcast where two avid gamers and their equally avid gamer wives discuss board games, relationships, and the interaction between the two. During this episode, the Blue Pegs give an early Gen Con 2014 preview, and all the Pegs review the games Splendor and Blueprints, and discuss the art of gaming on the road. And now, the designers of the action selection game, Place Your Workers, the Pink Pegs, Carrie and Christina. And the designers of the worker placement game, actually, this is an action selection game, the Blue Pegs, Patrick and Rob. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Blue Peg, Pink Peg. I'm your host, Patrick.
And I'm your host, Rob.
And here we are at episode 27.
Pegheads, the 27 Club is a group of popular musicians who've died at the age of 27. The club, in quotation mark, has been repeatedly cited in music magazines, journals, and the daily press. Several novels, films, and stage plays have been devoted to this idea. There's been many different theories and speculations about the cause of such early deaths and their possible connections. One biographer, Charles R. Cross, writes, "The number of musicians who died at 27 is truly remarkable by any standard. Although humans die regularly at all ages, there's a statistical spike for musicians who die at the age of 27. However, a study published by the British Medical Journal in December 2011 concluded that there's no increased risk in the death of musicians at the age of 27. Although the sampled musicians face an increased risk of death in their 20s and 30s, it is not limited to the age of 27. The entire list of Club 27 is surprisingly large, with approximately 50 names on it. The following is a small list of musicians who've died at the ripe young age of 27. Blues singer Robert Johnson died of strychnine poisoning in 1938. The original frontman of the Rolling Stones, Brian Jones, died of drowning. In 1970, Jimi Hendrix died of asphyxiation and Janis Joplin died of a heroin overdose. Jim Morrison of the Doors died of a reported heart failure. The founding member of the Grateful Dead, Ron Pigpen McKernan, died of gastrointestinal hemorrhage. David Alexander of the Stooges passed away due to a pulmonary edema. The drummer of Echo and the Bunnymen, Pete De Freitas, fell victim to a fatal motorcycle accident. Kurt Cobain took his own life in 1994, and Amy Winehouse died in 2011 of alcohol poisoning, all at the age of 27.
So let's talk about some board games. Yay!
Hey, I thought it was interesting 27 trivia.
It is interesting 27 trivia, yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. But what people really want to know is, what con are you going to?
Well, this year, our big group of friends, and every year, like I said in the past, we pick a con to go to. And this year, everyone wanted to go to Dragon Con.
Everyone?
Yeah, everybody wanted to go to, was voted on, and everybody, including myself, is going to Dragon Con.
Yeah, not everybody's going to Dragon Con.
Yeah, you're not going to Dragon Con. Where are you going?
I'm going to Gen Con!
And I'm
going
to join you!
Yeah, high five on that.
I'm not sure how Christina is letting me go to two cons this year, but that's what we're doing. But since I'm going to two cons this year, we're going to Gen Con on the cheap.
We are indeed. We've stayed at a variety of hotels. We've done the super, like the connected to the, yep, the con center. We've done the short walk. And now this year we're going to try the shuttle.
I'm 5 miles away, hotel.
Yeah, we are a little ways off from the con center. Because of the fact that we're trying to do it on the cheap, to be quite honest with you. But you know, we'll report back. The shuttle should be fun, and we're looking forward to getting down there.
It's going
to
be an intimate affair, just Patrick and I, not the big group. However, the famous AJ might be joining us, question mark.
He will show up on Saturday. but yes, yeah, AJ, I bet AJ comes. He can't miss out on a good time.
And he's kind of our Blue Peg, Pink Peg mascot.
He is indeed. We will probably have t-shirts on them that say don't be an AJ. But yeah, so we are staying a little off, but it's also going to be a working vacation for us.
It is.
We are there as in our capacity as Blue Peg Pink Peg representatives, getting news and reviews for you guys, meeting with, talking with people, having some information that we can pass on, sort of getting a sense of what's on the horizon so that we can prepare the best content for you, our beloved listeners.
Now, we're going to be doing that, but I'm going to take a little me time and get a couple things accomplished that I want to get done at the con, which is I'm taking a beginner sculpting and modeling like course and a beginning painting course. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to get in some miniatures this Gen Con, buddy.
Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
Yeah. You're killing me.
No, I'm excited.
Well, what
for
are
you.
We doing as Blue Peg Pink Peg?
Yeah, we do have a couple of official events that we want to talk to you guys about. First of all, we are going to be at the Dice Tower Network. We'll be holding a booth, and we will be at that booth. We're going to be there Friday from 2 to 3. So if you want to come and meet us, you can come by the Dice Tower Network booth. If you want to avoid us, do not be at the Dice Tower Network booth at 2 to 3.
Now, I know we're giving you this information a little early because we're super excited about
it. We'll let you know again.
We'll tell you again.
Yeah. Also, Saturday from 3 to 4, we will be there. We're also going to be at the Dice Tower Network's recording on Friday from 8 to 10 as just people.
Yeah, we're just going to be watching.
We're watching.
Also, we're probably going to make, the plan is we're going to bring some t-shirts too.
We will have t-shirts.
Hopefully.
Yeah, no, we will. And I think we're going to go and hang out with our buddies at the Secret Cabal at their meetup. Yeah.
We missed it last year.
Yeah.
We had
some
obligations. But this year, I plan on getting intoxicated with Jamie and Bonacore.
Yeah, I think that will that's going to happen. And finally, we have a special event, talking of Bonacore. We're going to be at the Stronghold booth from 12 to 2 on Saturday.
What are we doing there?
We're going to be demoing Stronghold games, including Valuspa! But we also have a special event planned.
You better put on your big boy pants and win some games.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to have a special event. If you come by the Stronghold booth, we are going to give you guys...
It's a contest.
It's a contest, friends. We're going to give you guys a phrase that pays. The phrase that pays!
Are we a morning show now?
We might be. People have said that.
We can do some music drops.
Boom! Yeah, but we're going to be giving you a phrase that pays. And what you're going to do is we're going to give one half of that phrase during our next episode. We're going to give the other half of that phrase during the episode after that.
So is that 28 and 29?
Yeah. You come and you tell us the phrase that pays, and you will be entered in a contest to win a prize pack from Stronghold Games. And as a bonus, you will get to demo Stronghold's incredible games with Rob and Patrick of Blue Peg Pink Peg.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it's going to be a lot of fun. And we will tell you guys more about this as we know more, but listen for the phrase that pays. I'm not going to say that anymore. I can't say that anymore.
I already hate it.
Yeah.
But we'll have some phrases that will
compensate
out. The phrase that compensates.
So that is our contest for Gen Con. So we also want to tell you guys a little bit about some Gen Con tips. We've been to Gen Con quite a bit, and we have a couple of tips that we want to pass on to you if you've been before or haven't been before. My first tip is, if you're going to do the games library, do not pre-purchase your ribbon for the games library.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, I have decided, while I may go into the games library because it's a good place to kind of meet and greet people, it's not going to be the place that I'm going to be spending most of my time.
The past 2 years that we've gone, we have bought tickets for that religiously.
Yes.
Last year when we went, I played more games outside of the games library than the actual inside of the library.
Yeah,
it was more interesting as action outside of it.
Yeah. Now, the difference for us was we had a pretty big group. So we had a lot of games that we had purchased. So we were playing all of our new games. But the thing is that, you know, if you can get out there and get to talk to people and interact with people, the great way to do that is outside the library. So my advice is don't focus on the games library. You know, one thing that while some of the hotness will be there, a lot of the hotness will not.
Yeah, I didn't. Matter of fact, the last year there wasn't a lot of hotness in there. There's a lot of people in there.
Yes, there were.
But I wouldn't define. You know, I wouldn't say the hotness. The games were in there.
Yeah, and you can always, not always, but chances are you're going to be able to walk up and get in anyways. On the nights you may not be able to get in there, but the thing I like to do is I'll go to the exhibit halls after hours, and you can get a table because there's nothing else there, and you can play your games there, you know?
The only good thing about the library is that if you're solo and you're looking to pick up a game, you know, sometimes there's people in there that are saying, hey, we got one more
space. Definitely. You know,
that would be good for that, maybe.
Yeah, and it is good because there are times when people will know a game that you're demoing, and so there's a higher concentration of people, and people, we've had some people like describe some rules to us in the games library. But again, I wouldn't focus my energy there.
No, I wouldn't either.
I think you're going to have a lot more gaming opportunities outside the library.
Now, while you're in Indianapolis, I recommend that you go to, is it Scotty's Brew
Scotty's,
Pub?
Yeah.
Yep, Scotty's. And order the bacon jalapeno peanut butter burger. I do this religiously every year. It is a date already set with my mouth.
Yeah, it is an incredible burger.
It sounds horrible.
It is delicious.
Yes, it is.
Super delicious. And I got to say, about the guys at Scotty's, last year, I called ahead and I made a reservation. Now, places do not take reservations during Gen Con.
But you were sure we had a reservation.
Well, and they told me that they were. They made me a reservation. And they didn't know, the person who took the reservation didn't know that reservations were not taken during that week. They honored it.
That was cool.
That was super cool.
Now, we came in front of everybody who was waiting to get in.
Well,
there.
You know what? But that's on, you know, Scotty's did the right thing, I think. And they're great. They're really, really great there. The other thing I would say in regards to food is the food trucks are actually... They're growing every year, more and more food trucks every year. Mm-hmm. And I recommend that, you know, that is a place where you can get food pretty quickly. I do not recommend, don't get the con food. Don't get the food inside the center. It's expensive and horrible.
Yep.
What we do is we usually have a big breakfast.
Yep.
And then we bring a bunch of stuff with us and kind of snack through the day and then have a big dinner. You know, where we can go have a few beers, you know, relax a little bit. But that's sort of my advice is you know, don't if you're going to carve out time to have meals, make it your dinner because that's really the way
to go. Cliff Bar or something on the go. You know, who needs lunch when you're going to have a giant dinner?
Exactly.
One of the things that I recommend you doing, if you're going to go to the vendor hall, and of course you're going to go to the vendor hall, and you want to go the first day, maybe you're excited about a game.
Mm-hmm.
The first day when they open that vendor hall, it is going to be packed. There's going to be a rush of people in there. If you're in a group of people that are all going to the vendor hall together, you need to get a little organized before you go in there. You need to let people know, hey, let's, you know, we're not going to be able to stick together because the aisles are going to be packed. We're going to lose each other. Let's agree to meet in a couple hours back in the hotel room because you're probably going to need to go back there anyway to drop off your games.
Yes.
You know, stay in contact with each other through text or whatever your thing is, but be prepared to lose your buddies.
Absolutely.
Also, if there is a game that you know is releasing at Gen Con that you want to get, make sure, you know, grab one of those books that shows what the layout of the vendor hall is going to be and go there first because most likely if it's a hotness, it's going to sell out.
Yeah, I actually got the very last copy of Bruges.
Some guy came up to you and wanted to pay you
$80 for it. And if you got something you really want, go get it because they will sell out for sure. The other thing in regards to that is know this, put your phone on vibrate. Because you are not going to hear your phone if you're trying to communicate with your buddies.
Mm-hmm.
So get it on vibrate so you can feel it because it's going to be just nothing but a dent.
Because it's a good feeling in the vendor.
And the other thing I would say is, you know, don't spend too much energy on... I heard you. I'm ignoring it. Don't spend too much energy on events. You know, I mean, events are fine, but there is so much happening at the con on its own that... that you are going to have a wonderful time. I would say I've had been to more events that disappointed than did not, in my experience. I would not, you know, I just think that be there for the experience.
We're not doing True Dungeon this year.
Nope, we're not.
Because, again, we're trying to go on a cheap, and that's pretty expensive. If you've never done it before, by all means, try it. It's great, but we're going to pass on it this year. My approach this year is a little bit different.
Yes.
It is working, as we mentioned, but I'm gonna be there to socialize. I want to meet pegheads. I want to meet designers of games. You know, I want to go out and have a beverage with people. You know, I'm going to take it a little... I'm going to play some games, of course, but I'm going to take it a little bit differently this year.
Right. Yeah, it will be a little different for us, which is fine. We're looking to meet and greet, and so if you're out there and you want to come and we will play some games with you. Mm-hmm. I tell you what, anybody who wants to play a game with us, we'll try to find a way to get a game in with you. Talking about games.
Yep.
There are lots of games coming out at Gen Con.
There are a bunch of them.
Yeah, and now a lot of them we don't know about. We're going to be finding out more and more. And we've been telling you guys, you know, over the last month and a half, these are coming out at Gen Con. And we're not going to touch on all of those. You know, things like
you know,
Among the Stars.
Among the Stars.
Diamonds.
Castles of Mad King Ludwig. Diamonds. You know, Five Tribes. Abyss. We've talked about all these before, yep. And we are super excited about all those. Don't get me wrong. In fact, Abyss might be, I might be going straight to Asmodee because I think Abyss may be my number one get. I don't know. There's, yeah.
You're going there first?
I'm super excited about that.
We'll have to see.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I haven't decided yet. But there are a lot of things that I'm really looking forward to.
So
what about you,
Rob? We're going to take some time and we're going to break down a couple games each that we're excited about, give you a little more information about it. Maybe a little bit about the theme, the fluff, and the gameplay.
Yes.
So I'll start off. I've talked about it in the past. Doomtown Reloaded by AEG. Now, this was a CCG. Now it's an expandable card game. The game features four factions fighting for control of Gamora, California. And what you do in this is you're going to build your own decks from a fixed set of cards in the box. Sounds a lot like Blue Moon Legends.
Yes.
You're going to play your dudes to control deeds in the town. You're going to use some actions, use hexes to thwart your opponents. Shootouts are resolved viva a poker mechanic. So that sounds kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is kind of.
Because every card has a suit and a value. Prepping your hand for future action is as important to the game as the deck building aspect. And some of the factions, I just want to tell, four factions in the game. They're the Law Dogs with the Sheriff and the Deputies. There's the Sloan Gang, which are like the cause of all the chaos. The Morgan Cattle Company is the Progress and Investment. And then there's this one I'm excited about, the Fourth Ring, which is a circus.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, and it has like a weird sci-fi element, right? Like this world. I think that's right. I think there's some sort of like either sci-fi or fantasy element that's going to come
into
this.
I haven't read that, but okay.
Yeah, I think that's right. Well,
what are you excited about?
Doomtown Reloaded does sound really cool. I am excited about Dead of Winter. I have to tell you,
yes.
You know, that's the one thing that may, you know, pull me first. Very high probability that because I cannot get out of Gen Con without having Dead of Winter.
Of course, it's by Plaid Hat.
Yeah, by Plaid Hat Games. It is such a remarkable game. It sounds so incredible. The more people I hear about, they talk about how it tells stories. People who play the game are talking about it for hours and hours and days after they've played the game. I love that. That's a perfect gaming experience for me. We've talked about it before, but it's a cooperative game where you're going to have these crossroad elements where you have decisions to make throughout the game. It's really exciting. If you want to hear more about it in greater detail, you should listen to our very first 7th Peg episode where we talked to the designers of the game. But Dead of Winter is really high on my list. And as I said, if I don't get out of Gen Con without that one in hand, I'm going to be upset.
I think that this one's going to turn me around on co-ops. But we'll see.
I think so as well.
Also, I'm excited about Istanbul by AEG. In Istanbul, you lead a group of one merchant and four assistants through 16 locations in a bazaar. At each location, you can carry out a specific action. The challenge, though, is that to take an action, you must move your merchant and an assistant there. Then you leave the assistant behind to handle the details while you focus on larger matters. If you want to use that assistant again later, your merchant must return to that location to pick him up. Thus, you must plan carefully to avoid being left with no assistance and thus unable to do anything. In this game, when a merchant has collected 5 rubies in his wheelbarrow, the players all complete one more round, and then the game ends.
Yeah, it looks like a really great game. I think that one's available now. You can get it, actually, at Cool Stuff. It's a Keener Spiel des Jahres nominee. I think it's probably going to win. That's my prediction. And it does look like an incredible game. It has a lot of setups, the modular board. You can change it out.
That's what I like about it.
Yeah, you got hard sets and easy sets. It's got some cool little elements as far as, like, you can go and arrest other people's meeples. And
their assistants.
Yeah, their assistants and stuff.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, so it sounds like a Garrett game. I'm looking forward to that one as well. And, you know, if I make it to Gen Con without already having it, it'll probably get gotten there. One I'm looking forward to is Shinobi Clans. Now, I've talked to you guys before about Shinobi Wata, and I love that game. Shinobi Clans is a different game, and it's got a really cool mechanic to it. The way it works is there are going to be multiple samurai or leaders or whatever that are going to be targets for assassination, and everybody has a set of cards, and they're going to play those cards down on top of the individuals. They have secret contracts to either defend or to assassinate those individuals, and they'll play assassin cards or defender cards. Then after everybody's laid their cards down, One at a time, you turn them over and you resolve them. If there are more assassin cards on one side than on the other side, then the leader is assassinated. And if you had the assassination contract, you win. If you had the guard contract, you don't. If it's the other way around, then they survive. And if you had the guard contract, that you get points. If you had an assassination contract, you do not. There are all these special cards, though, that are really neat in there where you can, like, lay one down and it eliminates. And there are weapon cards. If you lay them on top, if you have three weapons and three people to use them, then all the weapons work. But if you have four weapons and only three people to use them, that fourth weapon won't work. It's just a really neat deduction game with some really interesting mechanics to them, some really great cards, and it looks like it's going to be, you know, quick to get going. It plays with, I believe, 3 to 6 is the player count. Looks like it's going to be quick to get going, quick to get played, and a lot of fun. So that's Shinobi Clans. I'm looking for it. And the artwork is exquisite.
Panamax from Stronghold Games looks like it's a game right up my alley.
Yes.
I've decided that maybe I might be a Euro gamer, and this one sounds really, it sounds like it'd be scratching that itch.
I agree.
What it is each player manages a shipping company. Companies accept contracts from both U.S. coast, China, and Europe and deliver cargo in order to make money, attract investments, or pay dividends. At the same time, players accumulate their own stock investments and try to make money, as much money as possible. The person who has the largest fortune wins the game. Now, what's interesting is the play. On your turn, players remove a die from an action table to select contracts and load cargo or move ships until the pool of dice is emptied, ending the round. Over the course of 3 rounds, these actions are blended during the turn to create a logistics network, which each player uses to ship their cargo, minimize transportation fees, and increase the net worth of their company. And each company has a limited amount of stock that players can purchase in exchange for investing. So it kind of sounds dry,
but it sounds like
something that
it has some really incredible mechanics.
Me.
Yeah, that dice, pulling those dice off of the spaces in order to perform the action really looks cool. The way that things move through the locks looks really neat.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to this game.
You can push ships, and the board looks incredible. I'm excited about the like you mentioned, the dice and the action.
Yeah, that
table.
Mechanic sounds really incredible. Yeah, there's a lot going on in that game, and I love it. It seems really incredible. What I'm looking forward to also is Yellow's Guardian Chronicles. Now, this is a superhero-style game, and there's no doubt about it. Superheroes are hot in board game. I remember a couple of years ago at Gen Con, I saw a couple little superhero games, and I was like, huh, that's a genre that hasn't been explored. Problem solved, because everybody's got a superhero game. This one looks really neat because
superheroes and the new zombies.
Yeah, they are. It's a one against mini game, so you're going to be playing the villain or one of the mini superheroes. You have your card in front of you, but you have your action cards, and you can play them one of two ways. You can play two cards. You can either play them down next to your stats, and they will adjust your stats. So if you can increase one stat or at the cost of decreasing another. Or you can use your superpower, so on the other side. And you can play each of those cards different ways. You're moving through various different spaces trying to obtain objectives. The person who plays the villain is trying to obtain his objectives, launching nuclear missiles or what have you. But he's sending out his minions in order to fight them. So he controls the minions, sends them after the superheroes. The superheroes are minis. It's a mini-style game. Are moving through the space, attacking the various defenses that are up there, rolling die, using their superpowers in order to do it. It just looks like a fun game, and it's Yellow, so you know the components are top of the shelf, really incredible, great art, and one that I hadn't been paying much attention to, but as I started looking at some gameplay videos and reading more about it, I was like, this game looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. So that's Guardian Chronicles by Yellow. A couple other, you know, they're going to have King of New York there, the sequel to King of Tokyo, and Knight, the one game that I've talked about before, Knight of the Grand Octopus, which is a Cthulhu game for kids. Yeah. You can't go wrong with that.
Patrick, I know you're always on the lookout for new game mechanics. I think this one's going to be right up your alley. The Battle at Kimball's Cascade by Z-Man Games. It sounds like a side-scrolling video game from the 1980s, 1990s. In this game, players fly around in an ever side-scrolling space setting, which is represented by a row of cards. Now, each turn, the bottom row is removed and a new row is added to the top of the game board, or the left side of the game board.
Yeah.
Whatever way it is. And the players move their spaceships and resolve effects continuously performing actions such as collecting power-ups or money or fighting alien cruisers or blocking or shooting other players or dodging asteroids or black holes. The game includes mission and achievements, and the player's ships are fully upgradable with 4 different weapon classes, engine shields, and more. It sounds like a hoot.
Yeah, it does look like a lot of fun, and they are really putting a lot of energy behind this one. They think they have a winner on their hands, and if Z-Man thinks they have a winner on their hands, chances are they got a winner on their hands. It does look really exciting. Well, the last game that I want to kind of highlight here is by Queen Games, and it is a family game called Tortuga. And the way essentially this game is going to work is you're going to have a screen in front of you, and you're gonna be rolling your die in order to take those die and put them on different places in your individual board, and then they'll resolve based upon who has the highest values in each of the areas, and you'll be able to move your ship down one row, and then you're going to move your sailors down another row, and they're going to kind of meet up and trade off treasure that you're going to be getting.
Right.
And then you got to move that treasure back to Tortuga, and you get bonus points for collecting certain sets of treasures. The treasures are in different colors, and but you're ultimately trying to get your treasure from your sailors to the island, and there are lots of things you can do. You can use your cannons to knock their ships back. You can use your swords to knock their sailors back.
Is there some sci-fi in it? I'm pretty sure there's some sci-fi in that game.
Okay. Yeah, no, probably not. But it is Tortuga, and it looks like a really fun, light, very accessible family game. My family likes those sort of games where you have the dice combos. Mm-hmm. They really enjoy playing those. So that's one I'm very much looking forward to, Tortuga. Well, listen, that is our little bit of a preview of a preview of Gen Con. This isn't the last you're going to hear from us about Gen Con.
Obviously, we're very excited about
Gen
Con.
We are very excited. But those are a few little tips and some of the things we're looking forward to. As we learn more, we'll let you know. But let's move on over to the rules breakdown for the first of our games this week, Splendor.
It's all fun and games till somebody gets hurt, till somebody show up looking for their love. Yeah, it's all fun and games till it all goes there. Now you
Splendor is a 2-4 player set collection game designed by Marc André and published by Space Cowboys in 2014. Splendor is distributed in the United States by Asmodee Editions. In Splendor, players take on the role of Renaissance jewelers mining, setting, and selling precious stones within Europe. In the game, players draw chips that represent various gem types: sapphires, rubies, diamonds, emeralds, and onyx from a common pool. Players may draw 3 gems of different types or 2 gems of one type, provided there are 4 or more gems of that type within the pool. Players use these gems, i.e., 3 rubies and 2 sapphires, to purchase cards of various ascending values. These cards each have a gem value, and many of these cards also have victory point values. The higher the point value, the more expensive the card. Now, once a card is purchased, it stays in the player's stores, reducing the cost of future purchases for that player by 1 gem of the type shown. However, players continue to acquire cards of different and the same type, increasing the discounts such that as the game progresses, certain cards can be purchased with very few or even no chips. Players may also reserve a card into their hand, up to 3 cards, and gain a single gold coin, which functions as a wild gemstone. And play continues like this, each player taking one action, either get 2 coins, get 3 coins, buy a card, or reserve a card until one player has amassed 15 points. Now, there are also royal tiles that are claimed by a player that has acquired certain sets of cards. For example, 3 ruby cards, 3 emerald cards, and 3 diamond cards. And these are worth 3-4 points. Claiming a royal, however, does not take a turn and must be done. Now, as noted above, play commences like this until one player has reached 15 points. Then the round is completed, so every player that has not gone during that round gets one more chance to go, and the player with the most points wins the game. Splendor is a quick, simple but immensely engaging game that any player can learn and play within minutes. But before I get too deeply into my thoughts, let's head back to the rest of the Pegs and hear their thoughts about Splendor.
You're listening to Blue Peg, Pink Peg, a proud member of the Dice Tower Network.
It's gorgeous, is that new?
Yes, it is. I love it. He went to Jared.
Oh, Jared. Oh, I love this.
Oh, thank you. He went to Jared.
Oh, these?
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks, Patrick, for the rules breakdown of Splendor. Now let's introduce the Pink Pegs. Pink Peg Carrie.
Hey, Rob.
Hello, Carrie. And my wife, who has no lovely lady lumps. Christina.
What did I get, like a boob reduction or something?
No, you have lady lumps. I didn't want
to offend anybody.
I could see it was on the tip of his tongue, and then he glanced at me and changed his intro.
Oh, and you're not married to Carrie.
Yeah,
Rob.
I think you should do
it. Patrick, you're my new lady lumps. All right, gang. So today we are doing a mini review of Splendor.
Yeah, one thing we want to say about this game, it's a Spiel des Jahres nominee. At or around the time you guys are listening to this, it may well have been rewarded or not rewarded, the Spiel des Jahres. And so the Spiel des Jahres is the ultimate family game. And I want to ask you guys to start out, do you think this meets the criteria of a good family game?
Well, I mean, it doesn't rate up there with Twister, but I guess it's all right.
As a general, what do you think, Carrie? As a good family game, does this qualify?
Yeah, our whole family likes it.
Okay, well, let's kind of talk about...
It's fun, it's quick.
Yeah, let's talk about our general thoughts about Splendor. What do we think about... we'll start out with the components.
Well, now I'm thinking about my grandma playing Twister.
Yeah? Really? Don't think about that. Now I'm thinking about your grandma playing Twister.
I will say that during camp this week, the kids' favorite game was Twister. Like, all these kids. We played Twister.
Carrie runs a camp for 17-year-olds.
All right, so we're going to do the Blue Peg, Pink Peg rating for Twister.
Red.
The components, there was a lot in there. You got a bunch of cards. You get some solid plastic chips. You got a thick victory objects.
Yeah.
The objectives.
The royals are thick and nice. And, I mean, obviously, the gem of this game... Huh?
Oh, look at you being funny.
Are the chips. Everybody talks about the chips.
They sound.
Yeah, they're nice. They're solid. They're good to play with. They've got a nice hand feel.
They smell terrific.
Well, I mean, really, if you close your eyes, you could essentially be playing poker.
You could be playing poker.
They're a little heavier than poker chips, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. So they're nice. They're
bad. No.
Probably your they're about the same as regular, but let's go through and let's say the components. They're nice. The art is neat. I like how they have the mines or the various, you know, whatever. Then the transportation, and then they have the shops. It's kind of nice, and so that is a nice feature of it.
The box is a good size, but if you wanted to travel with this game, this thing would condense down to a small bag.
Yes, this game will travel very well. It also has a nice insert, so it stays together. It won't shift around in the bag.
Or if you just want to get rid of the box and make it even smaller.
Yeah, you can do that.
You can go with a bag.
You could. But I like the box because it's got spaces for each of the different types of cards. Okay, let's get into the gameplay of this game. What do you guys think about this as an experience? What do you think about the gameplay in this game?
It was quick to learn, easy to play, but I apparently cannot beat Patrick at all.
Nobody.
But nobody can beat Patrick.
Splendor is in my wheelhouse.
This is it.
I seem to have a good...
And every day he says, somebody play Splendor with me.
Yeah, I like playing this game. And the reason I like it is because it's easy to get out. We can get it going, immediately start playing it, and get a game in of it in, you know, in 10, 15 minutes. And it plays very well with two. We've played four, we've played three, we've played two. It really plays well with two.
Now, Christina and I have only played it with four and three players. How does two players play?
Mm-hmm. Well, play is essentially the same. What happens when you scale it down is you're going to have less gems to draw from within the pool. There's only, I think, four when you play. So it's a little bit tighter.
Right.
You know, because... and then you're also going to have fewer royals that are going to be out in play. But it plays really well with two. I mean, it plays a lot. It plays quicker, obviously. But it's a great two-player game. It it shines at all levels.
Yeah, when we were playing, the whole time I was just thinking, like, this is definitely a game you can take to a coffee shop. This is a game you can play in public, and it won't bother anybody. Yeah. It's a really quiet game.
Right.
It's pretty quiet.
Yeah, you're concentrating a lot. Mm-hmm. But I think that's great. I mean, I think it's good to have a lot of those types of games that you can access.
Yeah.
I think what is a bonus about this game is the fact that it is easy to teach and that you can have various people come over. I don't know if it's a... Would you guys consider this the next gateway game or like a tier two game?
No,
it's a gateway.
I think it's kind of a gateway game.
It's really easy to teach. You know, once you get over, okay, it's a set collection. You get cards that help you in your set collection. Mm-hmm. You're trying to get 15 points or whatever the score was.
Right.
I think that this game can be brought to many different types of people and many different types of occasions.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. I will say, in regards to this game, I wasn't impressed with this game in initial play. It felt kind of static. It felt kind of, you know, not too much going on. But as I played it more, I really started to see the tactics that went into the game, sort of the idea behind, you know, trying to build up your engine, but also get going towards those upper level cards fast enough.
Yeah, we know that. When you sit down to play this game, it's like the Matrix opens up for you. You just understand everything.
I do understand this game well. But the point is that there are some interesting tactical decisions that have to be made in this game.
Well, and I think, too, it's a kind of game where if you don't win, you want to play again immediately to figure out doing a different strategy.
Right.
Or how do I... Okay, that didn't work for me so well, so maybe I need to... Well,
I don't know about the different strategies. I think I've tried three or four playing with Garrett and Patrick, and I still can't win.
Yeah.
And I'll even like almost verbatim do the same moves as Patrick, thinking like at least I'll get like neck and neck.
Mm-hmm. The Matrix. Yeah.
Well, there's only one.
How do you feel about the replayability of this game?
I think it's fair to good. I think that because this game, you know, there's no real variation. The only thing that changes between play to play is the cards that are going to come out and the royals that will come out. There are, I think, 10 royals in the game, and you'll see a maximum of 5 during any one play.
I put it in one of those categories that you have it on your shelf maybe once a month, or when you have a group coming over, you break it out, you have some beverages, and you just play that game all night long.
Right.
But you do that once a month or whenever you have people coming over. It's not one of those things that I'm going to be running to the shelf to grab, but, you know, once a month, it's like, oh, okay, now I remember why I like this game. You know, and there's replayability there. It's just not a lot. It's average.
Okay.
Well, you know, you could put it kind of up with the replayability of a game like Scrabble, I would think. Like, every game is going to be a little bit different depending on who you play with, what their strategies are, but the game plays the same.
Yeah,
you know, you don't have to think about anything new every time you play.
Well, I will say the different dark cards that come out do really change up the game. Like, if you got all of one color, like we had all rubies coming out, and I was like, okay, well, I'm just going to go ruby heavy because nobody else wants these. And I was able to employ a strategy that took advantage of that.
It does change up the strategy, yes, but it doesn't change up the overall game.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like in any other games, you have different avenues to get points or, you know, whatever the type of game is. This is just the same mechanic through the entire time.
Yeah.
I do like the fact that this is a kind of game where you could like listen to music, you can have some peripheral things going on, and it really doesn't affect your gameplay.
Right, right.
I think that's nice.
It lends, I'll say this, you know, you say that you'd play this once a month. I've played this every other day for about a month.
It shows.
I play it a great, great deal because of the fact that it's so easy to get out. One thing that we do is we'll get a game of it in before dinner.
Yeah.
Maybe something's going on. We got to finish, you know, something. So we can, while we're finishing up dinner, we'll play a game of it. Or right before the kids go to bed, I might play a real quick game with Garrett. That's the one big advantage of this game, is that its replayability strength is in its accessibility. It is a game that you can pull off the shelf whenever you want, just to kind of put a filler game in. And it's a true filler game. It's truly a game that you can just get on the table and go. Well, let me ask you guys about the interaction. Not social interaction, but game player interaction. Because I don't know that there is some here, but it's very hard to take advantage of.
Well, it's mostly kind of incidental. Like, you know, if you're playing if you're playing four people, you know, you're like, all right, I've set up to get this card. You know, now you've got three other people going in front of you, or you know, two if you're playing a three-player game, and that most likely that card's going to be drawn. So you need to prepare for that. Like, what's my backup plan?
Well, right. And I think, too, you have a opportunity to block players from getting points if you know that they've got it set up to take that card.
Right.
You take it before them.
Right, the reserve option.
Yeah, to refrain from them getting points or right. even a royal.
Right.
Blocking is more important early game because yes. mid game, you know, or mid or late game, you can say, yeah, I'm going to block him. But then you're like, okay, he's got four other options.
Right.
Get
right. Right.
Or she.
Right. There is some blocking that can go early. And I've noticed that, like Christina, you employ the reserve option much more than I
yeah.
do. And I think you do it as a defensive play. I think you see a play developing for another player and you want to pull a card into your hand either A, before they take it, before you can get it,
right.
or B, so that they can't get it, because and then you'll build yourself up to that. And it's really hard to take advantage of that in this game because you can kind of look at what other people have going. You can kind of get a sense of where they're going in that early game because mm-hmm. there's fewer options. But as the options start to open up, you know, you get enough stuff that you can get the upper levels. It's really hard to predict.
Well, and that's what I think kind of shot myself in the foot with is that I was using my reserve hand and I wasn't banking enough jewels to be able right. to purchase other cards. And so that was kind of, I had a slow start.
Yeah, the downside of that is that you can't get those jewels right. and it is hard to get your engine going.
Except for with the reserve, you also get a wild chip.
Right.
And that's when I started using my reserve was to do the wild.
To get
and I was
that
like,
wild.
At least then I have another way to go.
Yeah, no, I get yeah. that.
Now, the value of this game, Cool Stuff has this game for $27.
Yeah. It's a fair price for the game. Good, probably. It's worth it, I think. I think that you will get enough play out of this to be able to take advantage of. When you look at the bits and you get it, you're like, wow, that's kind of a high price for
right,
this game.
For this is it.
Right. But you know what? You're going to get a good bit of play out of this.
All four of us want to take it on vacation.
Yeah, that is true. That yeah. does say a lot for it. Because immediately I was like, hey, can we borrow this? Because I think this would be great on vacation.
Yeah. It is a very flexible game. So it retains its value in that regard. When you see it again, you're not going to be overwhelmed with the sort of stuff you get. But it's a good value for your dollar. I tell you what, this is a mini review. So let's get on to the blue peg, pink peg rating system. Zero pegs is the lowest rating. We hate it. Six plegs is a high rating. We love it. Christina, do you want to start?
Yes, Patrick, I will start.
Okay.
I would like to give the Splendor, I'm going between a 3 and a 4. I think I'm going to say 4 pegs. And the reason behind that is I'm looking for more games that we can take out and play in public or on vacation or that travel really well. So, and I think Splendor is one of these kinds of games. It doesn't quite rank up there with Voluspa for me, which is... But it's enjoyable and I want to play it more. So I'll give it a 4 pegs.
All right, 4 pegs from Christina. Carrie, what's your rating of Splendor?
I'm giving it 4 pegs. Okay. And if I ever beat you, I'm going to raise it to 5.
Yes.
So but 4 pegs is pretty solid for you.
Whoa. Yeah, it's a game that we've been getting out a lot, and we'll take it camping with us for a vacation. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
Unless you guys rock, scissors, paper for it.
Ooh, we'll have to fight Rumble over it.
Yeah. Well, what about you, Rob? What's your rating?
I have to do a split rating. Okay. I stayed away from it. Split ratings. For me personally, it's an average game. It's mm-hmm. a 3. It is one of those that I would like to borrow from you guys from occasion, you know, to play. And again, you get some beers, you sit down, you listen to some music, like Christina said, you play the game, you put it away for a month.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's an average game. All right. I don't have a lot of strong desire to play it. However, it does play well with a lot of different people. It plays well with families. It's easy to teach. So it gets, you know, for everybody else out there that's, hey, I'm not quite like Rob. Matter of fact, every time Rob says something, I change my mind. It's a 4 for you guys. But if your tastes are like mine, it's going to be a 3. So a 3/4.
Okay, so 3/4 pegs from Rob. And I'm actually going to, same sort of analysis, but I'm going to just say a solid 3 peg. Because I can think of other games that I do like. Playing more than Splendor with Gateway Gamers, and that I like playing more. But the portability and the speed of teaching and playing this game does weigh in its favor. That said, It's a fun game. I enjoy it. But it's nothing that really blows my mind. I was a little shocked at the Spiel des Jahres nomination, to be honest with you. I like Splendor a lot, but it just falls into the average rating for me. So I'm going to go with a 3-peg. So in summary, we've got a 4-peg from Christina, a 4-peg rating from Carrie, yes, and 4-peg rating, yep, from Rob, and a 3-peg rating from me. All right. Well, that is our thoughts about Splendor. Why don't we move into our other mini review for this episode, Blueprint. Y'all know the rules. We don't with fools, man. How the did we get so cool, man? Never ever disrespect my crew. Blueprints is a 2-4 player game designed by Yev Chorgny and published by Z-Man Games in 2013 that plays in about 20 to 30 minutes. In Blueprints, players take on the role of architects constructing buildings from a pool of available resources: wood, glass, stone, and recycled materials. In the game, players roll colored die drawn randomly from a bag in order to create a pool of available resources. Players pull one dice and place it on a blueprint card that is placed behind a player's screen. These die will serve as blocks that will stack upon each other in order to create pre-planned structures. Dice must be placed next to or on top of one another. However, dice may only be placed on top of dice of an equal or lower face value. After a dice is selected, a new dice is drawn from the bag and rolled, adding to the resource pool. Play commences like this until all players have drawn and placed 6 die upon their structure. Then, structures are revealed and scored. Each colored dice scores in a different manner. Orange wood dice score 2 points for each dice that is adjacent to it. Green recycled dice score an exponentially increasing value for the number of green dice used in the structure. Black stone dice score an exponentially increasing value based upon how high the dice is within the structure, and clear glass dice score the dice's face value. After totaling values, players gain award bonuses for the first, second, and third highest total point values, but players also get prize bonuses for reaching certain objectives, such as using 5 die of the same color, using 4 die of the same face value, using 5 die of the same color, and constructing a structure that's at least 5 die high. Now, only one player can get each of these awards, and ties are broken in favor of the player that's used the most die of the in-demand resources, which is established at the start of the round. Scoring then resets to 0 for the next round. And after 3 rounds, awards and bonus values are totaled, and the player with the highest score wins the game. So that is the gameplay of Blueprints, a strategic game that's easy to learn, but hard to master. So let's head back to the rest of the pegs and hear what they thought of Blueprints.
We can make a mighty tower.
With these blueprints, we can mold a chocolate bowl.
With these blueprints, we can forge enormous yo-yos.
With these prints, we can build anything at all.
We've got blueprints, glorious blueprints. They give us endless potentiality.
All right, Patrick, thanks for that rule breakdown for Blueprints. Let's talk about it. What do you guys think?
Well, you know, this is a game that I was excited to see. I was very intrigued by this sort of dice stacking mechanic. It was an interesting mechanic when I first saw it, and I got it pretty early on when the game came out. And I enjoy the play of this game, but I have to say I wasn't as engaged by the dice stacking as I thought I would be.
Why is that?
I don't know. It just doesn't fulfill. It just doesn't seem to live up to the expectations. I guess you know what it is? The fact that there's only 6 die per turn is a disappointment to me. I think this game would be much more interesting if it had a few more die colors and about 4 or 5 more die building options in each round.
Should, or at least go up. Like, I keep wanting to build high on the black,
yeah,
but I kept getting just too high.
Yeah,
the points weren't good.
I would say fewer, not 3 rounds, maybe come up with some other way of doing that, but involving more complex structures.
Yeah. I don't know. I think if you kind of throw in more die colors and more options of how to maximize your points on your die, it's going to get really crazy. Like, yeah. When we've played, like, maybe it's just me because I hate math, but I mean, adding up your scoring and then your perspective of your structure, mm-hmm. you know, you could misscore mm-hmm. your structure. And then people are like, no, that's actually 8. And you're like, why is it 8? And then so like
it's
breaking
orange dice.
Right. It
yeah,
is those orange dice.
So I don't know. I think the level at it, that it's at right now with the number of die it has and the colors, I think it's makes it an even keel kind of a game.
Okay.
Like, you know, not maybe a gateway kind of.
Oh, yeah. It's a fairly light game.
Yeah, I think it's gateway.
I enjoyed the gameplay. I do agree. As you were talking about more types of dice, I thought, hey, what if you did a purple dice and how you score that is you roll it and it minuses everybody else's score.
Ooh, I like that.
You roll. But anyway, that,
that's super complicated.
Actually, the beauty of this game is that it is so easy.
It's simplistic.
Yeah.
Yes.
Aside from the
math. I could build higher.
But let's talk. We can what if every game to death. But let's talk about this game. I did like the gameplay.
Okay.
I liked. Now, Christine and I have only played this game 4 players. Now, mm-hmm. I played it maybe a 3-player game
you have
in the past. But mostly when we've played this game, it's been 4 players. How does this play with 2 players?
Well, it plays okay with 2, but
I like
you
it better with 2 because I win all the time, and I
yes,
do not
you
win
do.
At all.
But what do you think about as far as its comparison to 4 and 2, honey?
You know, it really plays just about the same.
Really, I think it plays better with 4. Actually, I enjoy 4, but now I win more with 4. She is correct; she kills me at this at 2-player. I lose every time.
But the gameplay doesn't change much with 4, like because you're always constantly bringing out a new dice. You're not just hoping for one, and no one's going to really get one on you by taking their dice.
Here's a scaling
you
problem.
You are and you're not.
Yeah, here's a scaling problem with 2. You've got all the same die in the bag. In 4, you use every die in the bag. So you're going to have fewer options. With 2, you're going to be using only half. I mean, you have more die in your pool. The way they scale it up is when you're playing with 4, you've got 7 die to choose from. When you're playing with 2, you've got more, 9 or 10 to choose from. So the idea being you're going to go through more of the die. That's the way it works. But you've got more choices to choose from each time it comes around. So, you know, all of the die are not going to get used up.
Since we're talking about gameplay, here's what I really enjoyed about it. You got those bonus points that you can get each round. You know, you can get 1 through 6, you know, mm-hmm. or you can get 4 of a kind, or you can stack them up higher, which is a little higher, or you can get all of one color, whatever those bonus ones are. I enjoyed sitting down, looking at it, and looking at the initial die roll and thinking to myself, what is my strategy going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched people grab their dice. In this last gameplay that we had, I saw that you were grabbing all of a certain color or a certain number or whatever. And I'm like, all right.
It was green.
Yeah, Patrick's going for the green. So I'm going to step in and I'm going to grab a green because that particular color, the more that you have, the more that points you get out of it. You know, and I myself was trying to get the bonus points of the 5s where you had 4 5s or whatever, mm-hmm. 4 particular number. Because the initial roll, we had a ton of 5s come out, and I was like, I'm going to be able to do that. I wasn't able to do it because everybody started picking them up real fast.
Right.
But I like that aspect of the game when you're trying to come up with a way to get those extra bonus points and you're watching people roll. I mean, you're watching people grab the dice that you need. I enjoyed that.
Well, and I think, too, it lends you to have to sometimes abandon your strategy that you initially had gone in on and change it up. I mean, one time when we played, Patrick, you were like, screw this. I'm not going to complete my structure. I'm just going for the tallest structure out there. And you got a ton of points.
Yeah, I won. I had the highest points during that round.
So I think that's interesting. I do like the simplicity of this game. Is there ever a time where everybody would have the same structure that they had to build?
No. I don't think
I wonder
that there's
what that would.
No, but you said
like,
you thought there were some repeats.
Yeah, I think there are. I mean, we've played it a whole ton, and I think I have seen some repeats in the game, but there aren't a lot. But I don't think there's 4 of.
Yeah, I wondered if it would make a difference because then you know, are people competing for the same dice? I don't know. It's just
The structures really are sort of incidental. I think.
Yeah. Okay.
It's more what tactic you're going to employ. Here's where I see the structures coming into play. It tells you whether or not you want to use orange or not.
Right.
Because if you have a lot of surfaces, you had one where you were able to maximize the 4s because you had it set up in such a way. That's the main place I see the structures having value. I mean, you can also use them if you want to use blacks or whatnot, but really the way to use blacks is screw the structure, stack them up.
right?
In my opinion, because you're going to get some pretty big points for that. But what do you think as far as the dynamic of the play? Do you feel like the gameplay, Carrie? Do you feel like the gameplay changes as game goes on when you play with four players versus two?
No, I don't think it changes that much.
No,
I mean there's a little bit of like luck, I suppose, if somebody else takes it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We kind of skipped over the components.
Oh, we should talk about it. Yeah, yeah.
You get a lot of dice. One gripe about the components is the bag that you use to get the dice out of is just enough space in that bag to put all of the dice. But once you start to play, you're supposed to grab the dice out of that bag. There's not enough room, especially if you have sausage fingers.
Yeah, I feel sorry for you when you're taking the
your
dice out.
Your giant man hands barely just like, fit in there.
Everybody's like, hey, get a dice out of the bag. I'm trying.
He had to get chopsticks out and like get it in there.
Yeah, well, exactly.
But, you know, the bag wasn't velvet, so that's good.
That was good. It was cotton.
I do despise velvet.
Yeah, when you first get the die in there to randomize, you need to randomize them before you put them in the bag. Because if you put them all in there in stacks, it's going to be stacked up because they won't mix because the bag's not big enough to really mix the die
in. Pretty much you want to go get yourself. You need to pull your old Crown Royal bag out of your D&D collection and use it for that.
Yeah,
I will say, wish that the shields, the player shields, were a little bigger.
And I wish that they didn't lean into you so much. You know?
Yeah. I wish they had a little light on the top. Like a little LED light.
I do know this. When I play anything other than exactly opposite Carrie when I'm playing this game, I have to literally look aside because she always has her shield like 5 feet out in front of her.
Yeah, you're just cheating.
And because she can't see them.
But I mean, if you're in a close proximity playing with people, there's no option other than to see.
Like,
it's
what,
not very big.
High and one inch on the side.
Right.
So maybe if it had like a roof.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I would say there's certainly, it's a tight little game. It's kind of smallish. It fits in the box just barely.
The interaction in this game is pretty minimal. I mean, pretty much what you're doing is blocking.
Yeah.
The dice that you pull, you can block if you play to block. But other than that, you got really
well,
no interaction.
It's a pretty solo game.
It's a solo game only not insofar as you have to pay attention to where other people are going. You need to pay attention to other people's draws because if they're going for a particular color, you need to say, okay, my tactic's going to be this way. And if you see them going for a particular reward and, you know, they have the advantage on the in demand, you need to abandon that. Or you need to be focusing upon the in demand so you can beat them on that. I think there's more interaction than you guys are giving credit.
No.
But
I disagree, sir. Right. I disagree with you.
I think it depends on how you play the game. I wasn't paying attention to anything you guys were doing because I was so focused on my structure. I did not get last.
She got last place.
But in a two-player game, more interaction because the dice that you pull has more of effect. But, you know, if, like, I was trying to block you, it was doing pretty good. But right before you went,
somebody rolled what I had.
Yeah. You got what you needed. Yeah. So, interaction.
Less from blocking, but more from knowing what tactics to employ. I really believe that's true. Yeah. Yeah. What do you think, hon?
When I think that there's not much interaction with the gameplay per se, except I do like that it is so fast and the three rounds go really quick. So it's a pretty quiet game, but I think you could have conversations on the side, but you're not interacting with the other player's dice.
No, you're right. It is a lightish game. You can definitely listen to music, talk to other people while you're playing to a degree.
You can get this game at Funnigan Games right now for pre-order. So they might have out of stock right now, but for $24.
Yeah, I think that's a good price.
That's kind of high.
Yeah, it's a little high.
I think it's fair.
Yeah.
This is, again, one of those games that you can condense down and take with you when you travel.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not playing with this dice stacking game on an airplane, but you can still play it when you go places.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
All right. Well, why don't we go ahead and rate the game? We talked about it a little bit. And Patrick, why don't you go ahead and start us off?
Okay. Well, I am going to stay with a solid 3 rating for this game. It's a 3-peg rating. It is one that I enjoy playing, and Carrie and I will get it out pretty regularly to play it 2-player. I think Carrie likes it more than I do playing it, and I think that's in part due to the fact that she kills me at it when we play 2-player. I do like 4-player a lot more. I find that the more players, it plays better. But it's still just kind of an okay game for me. It's one I'll definitely keep in my collection, and it's good for different people to access, but it's not as accessible as Splendor, for example, because of the orange scoring in particular. But it is a solid 3 rating for me.
All right, 3 from Patrick. Carrie?
Actually, I'm giving it a 3 also.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an average game, but I really like that it's so easy to get out, and it's so easy to play, and it's so quick.
Yeah, it is one that we do pull out a lot.
And I just like dice games. I like rolling dice.
Yeah, it is nice. It is fun to roll those dice.
And I like counting up small amounts of numbers.
Yes.
Oh, my. Okay. Rob?
I, too, am going to give it 3 pegs. It's just an average game for me. I did find some enjoyment out of it, but I'm not running to the wall to pull that game down to play it anytime soon. That being said, we go on travel. If we're looking for some small games to take with us, or we want to take a game and maybe put a bunch of games in one box, this is one of those that I'll add to it because I think it is. There is some fun. There is some entertainment, but it's just an average game for me. 3 pegs.
Okay.
All right. And I'm going to also go ahead and give it a 3 pegs. I liked this game. If we didn't have to add up the scoring on it, I think I would give it a higher rating. I mean, when you have to sit there and think of, you know, how you're going to add your dice scores up, like my brain goes to dial tone. It's like, meh. So it's really hard for me.
Right.
But if you numbers don't scare you, it wouldn't matter. So I'll give it a solid 3 pegs. Rob gave it a 3 pegs. Carrie gave it a 3 pegs. We all gave it a 3. Patrick gave it a 3 pegs. We all gave it a 3 pegs, which is a pretty good solid rating for Blueprint.
All right. Excellent. Well, let's go on and talk about our topic for this week. Traveling with games.
Cross the deserts, bare man. I breathe the mountain air, man. I travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota.
Hey, everybody. Today we are going to talk to you a little bit about traveling as a gamer. What do you bring with you when you're traveling?
Time travel.
Nope, I'm out.
You wouldn't time travel?
No, I hate time travel.
Guys,
I would totally time travel.
I explained to all of you,
nope.
This is not about time travel. Okay. No, you will not. You cannot marry your grandfather. We're not going to have that discussion again.
But what if you go and see yourself from the past making games?
That's
and you tell them, hey.
That's not the topic.
Put the Yahtzee down.
It's not,
Yahtzee.
You guys, I try to make.
What's our topic, Patrick?
Time travel.
No.
Today we're going to be talking about traveling with games. It's that time of year. You guys are traveling, hopefully taking your vacations. And we want to talk to you a little bit about some games you can take with you, some tactics you can employ while you're traveling. Board game playing can be a big part, a big aid in your traveling. And we have a couple of little pieces of advice that we want to pass on in regards to that. So the first question I want to ask you guys in regards to traveling with games, and it's just going to be, I'm going to put it to you simple. Everybody tell me, one game that you love to travel with. One game that you like to take on trips with you that's suitable for travel.
I like to take Voluspa.
Okay.
Voluspa!
Okay. Why is Voluspa a game that you like to travel with?
It's easy to learn.
Okay.
So regardless of where you're going, if it's with someone who doesn't know the game, you can teach them.
Okay.
It's compactable. You can break it down, put it into a bag. It can fit in small spaces.
Absolutely.
It won't get, you know, TSA won't catch it on their screen through the airport. You're good to clear and travel with that.
Right. Unlike the other games that include knives
and
razors.
And right.
Right.
Cash
of course.
Guns.
Obviously.
Right.
But I think it's just, and it's a fun game.
Yeah.
You can play it anywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So that's a great one. And I think you talk about a lot of the factors that go into travel. Compact. You want to have a game that's compact, easy to get out, but also a game that's easy to teach.
Yep.
I think that's a great factor with games because your good chances are that you're going to be playing with other people while you're traveling. What about you, Rob? You got a game that you like to travel with?
I do, but for different reasons.
Okay.
A lot of the times here recently, well, the past 2 or 3 years, when we go and we travel somewhere, we're usually going to a place where there's not a lot of gamers, you know, you know, Christina's family. Christina, you know, kind of lives away from her family. So whenever we take a vacation, it's usually go see her family. And they're not really, her friends and family are not really hardcore gamers. I like to take Ticket to Ride.
Yep.
It doesn't travel very well. It's a very big box. But it's a game that almost every time I've ever taught it to anyone, they love the game. They want to just play it over and over again. And as soon as we leave, they end up buying themselves a copy of the game.
Yeah.
So it's me actually going out there and evangelizing our hobby. But I take, you know, Ticket to Ride.
Let me ask you a question in regards to that. Ticket to Ride's kind of big box. You fly a lot, don't you?
Yes.
So do you guys?
Isn't that
take
one of my favorite things to do?
Yeah, but you guys, no, you, it isn't.
If we fly, I don't take ticket.
You don't right. take tickets.
We go there and we buy it once we get there.
Right.
Gotcha. We leave it to wherever we're going. Right.
Leave it as a gift.
Oh yeah, we bought it for gifts to places that we travel to. Like for every Christmas, if we go to Colorado, we've bought it for the mountain house.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
we know
yeah.
it's there.
And we may talk about that in a second. Yeah. But what about you, honey? What is a game that you like to travel with?
I think my favorite game to travel with is probably King of Tokyo.
Yeah.
And I would actually Ooh. Like a copy of Ticket to Ride because I think that's one of the most basic fun games. It's not like Scrabble or something mm-hmm. that
yeah.
everyone
it's
else
a good
is
gateway.
Playing.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeah, and it's fun. And it seems like kids and adults like it.
Yeah.
And it's easy to explain also.
Yeah, well Ticket to Ride and King of Tokyo is a very
King
good
Tokyo,
travel
I
game.
I think it's super fun.
That's
and actually,
one.
King of Tokyo, notwithstanding the fact that it is in a box, the box is a little, you can actually break it down pretty
but
nicely.
You could totally get it in a bag.
Yeah. I am able to fit it into a bag without too much trouble.
King of Tokyo is also one of those games along the lines of Ticket to Ride that every time I've taught it, they love that game too. Not as much as Ticket to Ride because, you know, if you're playing with like an older generation and they see giant monsters, they're kind of like, I'm not into that, but Ticket to Ride is, oh, I remember when we used to travel only by train.
On the railroad.
What is your family consist
of? No, it's Christina's family. They're so old.
Are they Laura Ingalls Wilder?
We have really good genetics.
Christina's the youngest.
Yeah. We don't ever die.
Well,
wait, what?
Forever.
I want to say, there are several games that I like to travel with. I often put together a travel pack, and it's pretty concise. But when I travel, I always
it
try
is
to...
It's not concise. It takes up the trunk.
No.
Whoa!
I've gotten
he's
ascension
gotten
in the
a
ranks.
Little bit, he's gotten a little bit better about making
well,
three games.
Yeah, let's break that down. When we're traveling for, you know, friends and family, I'll often bring several games. But when I'm traveling with just the family, I try to get everything into a large-ish, toiletry bag. And I can usually get 4 or 5 games in there.
What games are you taking that you can
very, play? Very small games.
I was going to say, what kind of toiletries?
Well, he has a lot of shampoos and conditioners.
Yeah.
So it's a really big toiletry bag.
I like products. But what I usually do is I'll bring a 2-player game. One that I often bring is Morels. It is a card game. All it consists
That's
of is
a very
cards.
Fun game.
Yeah, it's a set of cards and some chits. And so I will bring that. Another one that I like to bring is Rivals of Catan. That is just a bunch of tiles and a couple of cards, and it's a 2-player game as well. And then I'll also usually bring, you know,
Twilight Imperium.
Yeah. I bring Pinata and Hive.
I just thought of another one while you were talking.
What's that?
Carcassonne would probably be a
I
good
have
travel
that written
game.
Down.
Yeah, Carcassonne travels well.
Yeah.
It travels
and
well. Even in the box,
like
it travels
it.
Well.
It's
yeah,
easy
it's
to
easy
explain.
To explain.
Yeah, it's a good one as well.
And you can play it in public.
Yeah, and then
King
I'll
of Tokyo, you cannot play in public, I don't think. The, there's
not?
Too many dice.
No, I think you can play it
Maybe
in public.
Maybe if you put a towel.
Are
like
you
a,
playing in the library or something?
Yeah, I don't think it's that big a deal.
Live on the edge.
It would be that big of a deal.
No, I don't think people care.
A coffee shop?
No, not at all.
Try it this week.
Not at all.
So I think that's, you know, knowing what kind of games you want to travel with goes into the compactability.
All right.
And you guys kind of hit a nerve, I think, somewhere with packing the games. Because I think that's a big thing is how much space do you have?
Mm-hmm.
And what can you allot for games and what you should allot for your underwear?
I agree.
And where you're going.
I agree.
Where
I agree.
Like,
those are big factors.
Are you going to be playing a lot of 4-player games? Like
finally
we started paring ours down to 2-player games, or for family games, we have like just gestures and set and other things that are also small.
Yeah.
But we can play quickly with the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But the other games are at nighttime after they go to bed.
That's right.
Patrick, you and Carrie, you do a lot of gaming when you go camping. Christina and I, not so much. What advice would you give us in regards to what to take, how to do it for camping?
Well, I think you need to think games. Along the lines of, first and foremost, as a general rule, board games should be out. And by that, I mean anything that involves a major board element is something you should not
and
bring with
pieces.
You. Yes. And then
you don't
the next thing is
with tons of meeples
right.
and chits and stuff like
right.
that.
Components
okay.
are a problem. Carcassonne is not a great travel game because often when you're camping, you're going to be at a
in regards to camping.
Yeah, in regards to camping. Often when you're camping, you're going to be it'll be over at night and you're going to typically be at a picnic table.
Right.
So you're not going to have a nice even surface. Now
right.
we often will take a towel or something like that and lay it out on the table so that things aren't falling through the slats. But you're still not going to have a nice even surface. So Carcassonne doesn't work well because...
The Luspa, you'd lose all the
pieces. Yeah, the tiles tile laying games are not ideal.
I imagine card games.
Card games are really the way to go as a general rule. There are some other... A great little game, Lost Cities, is a great camping game. It has a smallish board. It has just a set of simple cards, and you can play it back and forth.
Seven Wonders, didn't we play that camping?
We played that cabin camping, not camping.
I said, there's a lot of
no, there's too much stuff.
We played
stuff.
That like every night. Yeah, we were in a cabin
in the Cape. We played it. And it actually plays. By the way, the two player variant can be okay, but it takes up a little bit of space. And we have traveled with that. So card games are often a way to go.
One game that we have played that had a number of components, but not too bad on a couple of camping trips. We've played Castle Panic on camping trips. That's probably the most involved game that we've ever
played. Is that the one we played with Josh and Beerta?
Yeah, that's the one where it has a round board and it's got, you know, some pieces, but they're big-ish. They're chits.
So what I'm hearing you say is that you can't take Bora Bora camping.
No. If you want to keep Bora Bora, you probably can't take it camping. So yeah, I say have a nice, robust collection of card-based games.
Blueprints would be a really good camping game that is 2 to 4.
Or even Splendor would be good.
Mm,
Splendor plays well. Yeah, and that's really what you got to focus upon is components. And the other thing I'll say in regards to that is be ready to break your games down. Take them out of the box and find a way to store them so that you can put them in your backpack easily. Another good game that would go good on the road, by the way, is Dungeon Roll. That's a good camping game.
Oh, yeah, that's just dice in
compact.
There. Yeah. Well, and I think you bring up a good point of, you know, you've figured out a way to bring games while you travel is you have a large toiletry bag, and that's kind of what you set aside. So if you travel a lot or you want to start traveling with your games, maybe you create your carry-on for your games.
Right.
And then that's just always what you take.
Right. And that's what I've done is I've found the games that travel best for us, that play best for us, and I know which games to pull when it's time for us to travel.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. Let me ask you about a couple of other things in regards to traveling with games. When you're traveling with games, what are some advice that you would give for people, you know, how you play games when you're traveling? We've talked about what games to bring, but do you have any advice for, you know, how to play games in travel? You have to play it a little differently. What are some advice you'd give?
Well, I think it's tough. I think, you know, we have, you know, Harper's almost 4, and like when we travel with her out of town, we stay in hotels. It's kind of like you're kind of locked into your hotel room once your kids go to bed. And so what games can you find that play quietly?
Mm-hmm.
And that are 2 players, but also don't require maybe a lot of light to see.
Yeah, I was going
to
say that. Like, card games are fine, but not if they have a lot of print. Because usually it's us huddled in the corner of a hotel room with a light. Can't read this.
Yeah, you can't talk and you can't see.
Right.
Yeah, you're
so
right.
That's kind of, you know.
Like a Veluspa, not to go always back to Veluspa, but Veluspa, you just have the tiles and you know the tiles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you can play that on the floor. We've played more than 1 or 2 games on the floor outside of the bathroom. You know, kind of sitting there maybe with the wash.
Headlamps on.
Yeah, the headlamps on, the wash light from the bathroom.
Actually, headlamps are a really good idea. We've done that at camping.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. I'm going to write that down.
Now, when we travel, we very often will camp. And a big part of why we do that is because we have youngish kids, and you can put them in the tent and come out and you can actually interact with each other. You know, you put your lantern out, like they're in, that you have a private room that they're in. You can separate them, and they go down a lot easier for us when we're camping, and we're able to spend a lot more time together talking, hanging out. That's a big part of why we camp when we travel, is because of the fact it gives us more
and
opportunity.
It's a great way to save money.
Oh yeah, it is good money savings.
I don't know. Yeah, Rob brought up a good point for us is that when we travel, we tend to travel out of town long distances. So we're not traveling in our car where we can kind of throw everything in. I mean, we have to be pretty precise on what we take.
Right,
with
and camping may not be an option for you, but yeah, you're right. When you're in a hotel room, you're dealing with a very unique set of circumstances. We have played games out in the hall. That has happened for us.
That's funny.
Yeah, just outside in the front door, you know, where we can have a little more light. It works.
One of the things that Christina and I like to do when we travel is to visit game stores.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the things I like to do. I like to report on it when we go and do that, you know, to the Pegheads. But, you know, I also like to see what other, you know, cities, what they offer in regards to games and what their gamers are like. And so that's one of the things when we go out there, we will buy a game usually too.
Yeah.
Especially, again, since we're traveling long distances, we'll buy a game there that we can take home with us, a small game. But, we enjoy doing that, is to check out other game stores while we travel.
Yeah, we enjoy that as well.
I have a question. What's your favorite game store that you've been in the U.S.? Like, what do you think the best
wow.
one is?
Because
I remember one you came home and talked about.
Well, the one in Portland, Guardian Games.
Guardian, yeah.
That one really, really impressed me out in Portland when we were out there. It had a great staff, great selection, ton of rooms. One of the things that really, really was awesome out there was the fact they had like the Dungeons & Dragons camp for kids.
That was cool. I remember you talking about that.
So, I mean, probably that one.
Yeah, we told the Pegheads about, and whenever Rob comes back from a trip, and we've done it too, we always give a little review of the shops that we've been to, and Guardian definitely came off well in those reviews.
Well, I think that's a good thing to keep in mind if you're traveling and you either can't take a lot of stuff, just plan to visit a board game where you're going and buy a game while you're out there.
Well, I think that's a great idea. You want to do a little research to find out what's in where you're going, so you can have great options for that.
Well, and sometimes even when you do the research and you think like, oh, I'm not going to go to this board game store because it just is only promoting Magic, I'm not going to go there. You should go anyway,
right?
Because we went and it was like, whoa, there's so much more in here that they're not advertising.
I agree. Their web presence cannot necessarily be indicative of what you're going to see in the store.
Well, and I like that every time we go to Raleigh at least once or twice a year, in Richmond a couple times, and it has just become habit every time we visit there that we go to the game store in Raleigh, and you did that game charity event.
Right, right.
And then in Richmond, you've gotten to know the people at that game store. And it's just kind of fun to like start making relationships with people who own stores and buying things from them.
Yeah, I agree. And another thing is, if they have a game cafes are starting to pop up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, we've been to Snakes and Lattes, talked about that on the podcast. Do a little research. If you're going to a big city, chances are there may be a board game cafe. And what I would say in regards to that is, travel is a great opportunity to play games with people you don't know.
Yep.
And using games as a way of getting to know people. In campsites, if you're camping, you know, you're going to maybe, having camaraderie with other people in the campsite. It is a great icebreaker for people that you otherwise want to hang out with, or, you know, you just may want to, you know, spend some time with either at a cafe or otherwise. Games are a great tool for that.
Well, and I think, too, if you don't travel with games and you're going to start, the people that you start to visit, they're going to start thinking that when you come, you're always going to be coming with games. And
yes.
So they're going to look forward to that. And then you're going to be that couple or those gaming people that show up and everybody's excited that you're coming because they know you're always going to bring fun games to have.
Right. And you alluded to this, and I want to give you guys a chance to talk about that as we wrap up here. You know, you guys have a tradition when you travel at this point, probably because of poor planning, but now it's more of a, you guys buy a game very often when you go somewhere and you'll leave it for the house. You'll leave it for
which is a really good thank you host game.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
You know, well, gift rather.
Yeah. And like, Ticket to Ride, I think, was the biggest game we've introduced to my family in the last couple of years, almost to the point of that. Like when people ask us, are you guys coming for Thanksgiving? What games are you bringing? Like they're asking on the front end, like, what are we doing? So that's kind of nice that we have been kind of those evangelist spokespeople to spread the love of gaming to everybody.
I'm going to make
say it now. Say it now.
That's fun. It's, you know, exposing people to things that they wouldn't necessarily have done on their own.
Right. And I agree with that board games are, if you're traveling and visiting somebody, it's a great opportunity for you to go and buy something for your host to give them. You can teach them to play it while you're there. We do it. I do it every year. When we go to one event, I'll always buy a game, give it as a gift, usually teach everybody to play it. And it's a nice sort of way of, you know, spreading the word, having a good time with the people that you're with, but also, you know, showing gratitude for, what you're doing. Well, listen, those are a few thoughts that we have for you as you head into your summer vacation. We want to make sure that you travel safe, that you have some great games. We'll probably start a little thread on our guild where people can recommend games or other advice.
I also want to hear travel stories. I'm sure those are out there.
That'd be great. We'll just start a general purposes thread on this on our guild.
Yeah, I think it would be great, too, if pegheads are traveling to other places where other pegheads are. Get together.
Yeah. We do have a couple. We do have a couple of
meetup thing. What is that website?
Meetup, I think is what it's called.
Meetup is what it's called.
Yeah. We have had a couple of peghead reunions, buddies hooking up. And if any of the pegheads do travel and find out that they can visit with someone else, that would be great for us to hear about. Well, listen, enjoy your vacation, like travel safe, and as always, have some fun
and play some games.
Are we there yet?
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Blue Peg, Pink Peg. If you want to learn more about Blue Peg, Pink Peg, you can head over to our show page at www.bluepegpinkpeg.com. There you can learn more about the things we discussed during our episode and all the things we're up to in the Peghead Nation. Blue Peg, Pink Peg can also be followed via Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Board Game Geek, all by searching Blue Peg Pink Peg. If you want, you can head over to our Board Game Geek Guild, join up, and join the conversation. You can also go over to iTunes or Board Game Links and give us a rating or a summary. You can also heart us up. It helps more people learn more about what we're doing. If you want to talk to us directly, you can always email us by emailing bluepegpinkpeg@gmail.com. Blue Peg Pink Peg is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network. Blue Peg Pink Peg is a production of In Your Ear Media, all rights reserved. Blue Peg Pink Peg's theme music is written by Scavoovy and the Epitones.